Hey,
Ron.
Dwayne here.
How are you?
Hey, Dwayne, how you doing? I'm Ernie Chambers.
I know you.
Okay, can we come in and talk to you a few minutes?
Okay.
Man, I'm so glad to see you.
Good.
Dwayne Bigler.
Ben, how are you?
Channel 7, how are you doing?
All right.
Good.
He's been around Omaha a lot of years. He does a program that deals with black people's problems. Once a week it's called Kaleidoscope. So, come here, can we sit down and chat with you?
Go ahead, man.
Been a long time. No kidding. I didn't know I'd ever see you alive.
I'm not going to waste a lot of time in beating around the bush. I'm going to tell you what might be troubling you about some of the things that happened in the past. I was in court the day that you testified, and I was there in the morning when you first spoke, then when you came back in the afternoon with the dark glasses on, and your lawyer, when he asked you to take off the glasses, in my opinion, should have described the condition of your face so that it would have been...
You were worried that the...
I really was.
You know, there was someone else that had stopped here before. I don't know if you know George Case.
Yeah,
you know,
we know.
Yeah. You know, for all this time, you know, that it has passed, you know, one of the biggest words that has been with me is, you know, that there might have been harm intended for me, you know. And at this time, with my family, you know, and the two little ones, my little boys, and the two all over there.
Oh, yes.
Well, okay.
And, you know, and there's been a lot of concern right now, you know, inside me, deeply, that, you know, hopefully, there's no harm coming my way.
None.
You
know?
Dwayne, and I will tell you this, if I thought that anybody was interested in harming you, I would not have been interested in seeking you out. I don't want to see anything happen to you. And in fact, Ben has a letter that David wrote.
Oh, yeah, right. After all these years,
open the door, there I am. But that's my job. I've been representing our community for a lot of years. My job is to come around where we are. But see, we saw Ben.
Were you in a forum that they had going on at Creighton University where they were talking about some of the stuff over in Iraq and...
You
know, I watched you on TV.
Oh, so you did see me there before you saw me here.
Yeah.
See, I haven't changed that much.
I can't remember the other guy was back up in the top row up there. It was all, oh, sit down, you don't hear like that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you watched it. A bunch of them were saying, turn off his mic. But when I have something to say and I get the opportunity, I'm going to go ahead and say it. And that's what I was doing then.
Yeah.
But in this instance, what we saw happening was a young kid who was a victim of a system. Everybody who is aware of the part that you had to play in all that sees you as a victim, just like Ed and David were. It wasn't a situation where you got a grown man who set out with the intention of implicating some people who were innocent, in my opinion, of any wrongdoing, and said, I'm going to get these guys because this system wants me to do it. That's the way people still view you, even though you're, what, 36 now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It took me a while to get my mind to the point where I could see you as being a grown man now. I still think of you as the kid who had been misused by the system. Ed never had any hostility towards you. David never had any. And they're the ones who would be most affected by what happened. So if they don't have any hostility towards you, there certainly isn't anybody else who would have.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you believe me when I tell you that.
Well, I hope so, you know, because, you know, from where I'm at, it's been 20 years now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been an incredibly long time, you know, that all this has elapsed. And, you know, with me, I, you know, my dad's dead.
Uh-huh.
My grandpa's dead. My uncle's dead. My mom's dead.
Uh-huh.
None of these people, I haven't seen any of these people, you know, in all this time. You know, none of my family.
Who do you think might be inclined to do something to you as you thought about it?
You know, my grandfather, of course, my grandmother's dead too. You know, it's been a long time.
Uh-huh.
I've lost a lot of people, and I've lost a lot of things in life, you know, with my family. And I've had to live alone, and I've lived alone for all this time. And, you know, my grandfather was afraid for my welfare. And that, so he asked me to, you know, just stay away. He asked me, you know, not to come back home, and that was for my own good. So with all these years that have gone by, you know, that has pretty much really embedded itself in my mind, in my heart, so that I don't know, you know, what's there for me.
Did your grandfather indicate who he thought might would hurt you, or was it because...
One of the things that he mentioned more so than anything is that, you know, Dave and Ed were looking for an appeal, and they were attempting to get an appeal to get out of prison.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't really indicate, you know, really who had intention of hurting me, you know, but he was kind of deferred to that, you know, and he deferred also, you know, to Marcus and the people that were involved in all that back in those days.
And that was said to you at the time, near the time when this happened, when you were 15 years old.
Well, you know, at the time when all this happened, it was mentioned to me, but Donald, you know, Donald had mentioned, he said, hey, this is the people that are looking to have you killed, that are looking to expose you, to prevent you from testifying and saying anything at all.
Was that at the time it happened, around the time it happened, that Donald told you this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And George Case, you know, I didn't acknowledge to George or the fellow that was with him, you know, who I was, you know, and the reason for doing that is just, you know, I wanted to say to them, you know, that just simply, if there's any harm that's intended for me, you know, I'm more than gladly stand right out in the open so that it can happen, because I only want my family hurt.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm not, you know, as far as running or trying to hide or anything like that, you know, I have no intention of doing that.
Uh-huh.
I'm not intention of doing that, you know, so I've got a life to live and family to bring up. And,
right.
You know, I tell you what.
This is a depressing time to me. Is it that way to you, or you like it here?
Well, I haven't liked anywhere I've had to be.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because while we were driving, I told Ben, I think I'm going to do 10 years in the pen to stay. Or be a lamppost in Omaha than the mayor of Spokane. There's something about this town that is just kind of depressing to me.
I don't really know a lot of people here in the town, you know. When I first got here, you know, my intention to continue on and do something substantial in my life, you know, and, you know, all of this has never let go of me.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it has always lurking back in my mind, and it's, you know, it's always haunted me.
Well, not for him. Oh, go ahead. I was
going to say,
okay, from my peace of mind, when you testified in the morning, it's obvious that what you said was not what the prosecutor and the state wanted to hear you say, because you didn't implicate
Ed and David. What they had told me was simply this. They didn't practice me or they didn't take me through testimony and say, hey, you know, like, what are you going to answer here? They didn't ask me anything like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, just O'Leary.
Uh-huh.
You know,
he's dead now.
Is he?
Uh-huh.
And what he had to say was, you know, all we want to do is just tell the truth. And that's all we want to do. And so they never rehearsed me or anything on what to say. When I'd one of the things I'd asked was that, when I went into the courtroom, you know, I asked, you know, is Ed going to be there? So I felt a deep regard, and I still do, for Ed, you know, and I always have. But I asked if he was going to be there, and I said yes. And I was afraid to talk in front of him. I was afraid to talk in front of him and to just any reason to see him, you know, because I was afraid of him. And Don had mentioned that, you know, that there was reason for me to be afraid of him. When they asked me, I know what you're wanting to know, they asked me a lot of questions at first, and I said, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I didn't know, because I felt that inside myself that maybe I can carry this load for no reason whatsoever, because I was taught that you're supposed to have a loyalty and a devotion. You're never supposed to speak. And I wanted to be deep inside me to try and maintain that. I thought to myself that that was what I was supposed to do, and that's what Ed wanted. And so I tried to do that. And only to finally, he took me out and he put me into a room by myself. My grandfather came in and he sat down and he said, Wayne, I don't know what's going on, and I'm not going to ask you what's going on. He says, but whatever you do, he says, I want you to know that Jesus is with you and that I love you, and that it doesn't matter what will happen. He says, I will stand by you. And he left. My father had to talk to him, so he left, and he went out of the room, and Donnie came in. And Donnie sat down, and Donnie said pretty much the same thing. He said, whatever you're doing, he says, I'll stand by you. He says, even if you're going to get killed, he says, I'll stand by you, and I'll get killed with you. And I thought to myself, I'd ask him about my dad. He says, well, he says, there's charges being brought against Daddy. He says, there were charges brought against Daddy. There were charges brought against Teresa. Because they talked to you. And he said, those charges against them, he says, they will probably be pressed against them for the involvement. And I told Donnie that they didn't have any involvement. But he said, it's out of your hands. He said, that's just the way the things are going to go. He says, so whatever you want to do, he says, it's fine with me. And I just thought to myself that, well, the best way for any of this is to tell the truth and just to simply just say it. And so a fella came in, and I asked him if I could go ahead and I could testify. And he took me back out and testified. And I said only what had happened. I didn't say anymore. And I know, I remember you know, probably the greatest thing in my heart, when you walked up to me and you thought something had someone had hurt me.
Uh-huh.
And I know where you came from.
Uh-huh.
And no one had hurt me. Like the stress and the pain and all that I went through, it showed in my face that I hadn't been harmed.
It actually looked like your eyes had been bruised and made.
If you had known, if you could have felt the inside of my heart, you know, just like just somebody took a big bass drum and took and got inside me and just started beating away, you know, I could feel like, as I sat on the witness stand, my heartbeat. I felt that everybody could see me, you know, my entire body pulsating, you know, the way my heart was beating, and I was under a lot of hurt. I was under a lot of stress. I had a big concern for my family. I didn't want to see my family suffer for anything that they had nothing to do with. And that was very important as well.
Did they tell you that if you implicated Ed and David, that the charges against other people would be dropped?
No, they didn't say that. They didn't say that at all. You know, and Donnie had said, you know, that there were charges being filed against you, and against the dad, against Teresa, because Didier had seen me, Teresa had seen me, and my dad had talked to me. And, you know, and because he had talked to me that they were, you know, that he was after you, that he said that he was aiding and abetting, because he didn't offer anything as to where my whereabouts were, where it was. And no one pressured me.
Okay, now, did you make a phone call to 911?
Did I?
Uh-huh.
And
say that there was a woman being beaten at this house. That was your voice.
That was.
Have you heard that tape?
They played it. They played it one time before when I listened to it.
Did it sound like you?
Gosh, I couldn't tell what it sounded like you.
Have you ever heard your voice since then?
No.
Was your voice at any time, as far as you can remember, while you were 15 years old, deeper than that of a man? A deep bass voice.
Gosh, I mean, it's been a long time. You know, like, in my family, I there's a lot about my family that I don't remember. I have very brief memories of a lot of those, you know, like those times. There's a great deal of things that occurred in that time that I have no recollection about.
Has anybody...
I've been digging through Donald. I had seen Donald. I saw Donnie after about 17 years. I saw Donald. And anyway, I had gotten from him just a packet of papers that dealt with the gospel and dealt with church and with Jesus. And just here yesterday, last night, I happened to be going through that packet, you know, and just looking through it. And I found in a obituary my uncle.
Oh,
Unionville. My uncle, yeah.
Bill died?
Yeah.
I went to school with him.
Yeah, he died.
And I didn't know that.
He died in 1984.
No, I didn't know.
1984. Matter of fact, I was just digging through a stack of papers, and, you know, and I'm looking at my Uncle Bill, and, you know, there's so many things about those times now that I don't remember. You know,
uh-huh.
My mom died in 1968, and after my mom died, life was gone.
Okay, now, who told you to make the call?
Don't tell me to make the call. It was just in all that had transpired, you know, mentioned by Ed, you know, about how it would be done. And putting all things together.
Why did you make the call? That's what I'm trying to figure. If you can recall. Okay, what number did you dial? Okay.
You know, in all this time, the very first confrontation that I had with any of this was when George Chase and what's the other fella?
Joe Bowman.
You know, had come my day. That's the first time that it's ever been confronted with me to even trying to remember, and that's why, you know, when I mentioned to you about, I think I know what you're asking, is because I was mentioning when George had come to the door, those are the things that he asked.
That's what everybody's wondering. I'm going to be honest, because see, when you were growing up, you're considerably younger than I am.
Well, yeah, sure.
And see, there'd be less difference now because you're a grown man, but as a child,
I feel like I'm a grown man. There's a lot of me that doesn't feel like I'm a grown man.
That's a feeling that I have. It might be with you.
And, well, of everything I've gone through in all these years, Kim and I finding, this is our first home. We kind of bought ourselves a house.
I see.
And, but with those fellas coming to the door, it's just my life hadn't passed. It hadn't gone anywhere.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel very old anymore. I feel very young.
And you look very youthful, too. The only reason I'd say you're 36 is because I can add from how old you were then to how old you'd have to be now, but you don't look anywhere near that. In fact, no gray in your hair.
Yeah, you don't look any different. You don't
look all that white. But I was hoping that I look enough like who I am so that when you saw me, you'd recognize me and know that I'm who I say that I am, that I'm from the neighborhood. I've never moved out of the community. I still get into the barbershop every now and then. I don't have time to work because I spend so much time down in Lincoln, in connection with this legislative work. But I have never moved out of the area. We still have the same types of problems, and I feel that's where I'm probably going to spend the rest of my life trying to do whatever I'm able to do. And this is a matter that has been in my mind for a long time. What did you tell them that Ed and David's connection was? Because, Dwayne, you have to realize that there's been so many versions of everything that you supposedly said, and I thought you'd been physically...
You really thought?
Because your face looked discolored around your eyes.
When you walked away, you were very reluctant to walk away. You weren't, in fact, you weren't going to walk away. You weren't going to let go of
me. And see, the reason I wouldn't tell people that, they might not believe that that's how concerned I was, because with you not around to verify, there are too many times that somebody will come up after something happened and say, hey, I was there, and I thought the man was hurt, and I wasn't going to let him do anything else to him. People say, yeah, and you're just saying that. But Ben and anybody else who's heard me tell what I saw in the courtroom will hear me tell how I thought that you had actually been hit by those people. And that's why I thought the lawyer should have described your condition. But see, your face didn't look right. He could have described changes that had occurred. Your eyes were swollen. It did look clearly like you'd been crying. So there was enough to make you didn't look the same way when you came back in the afternoon as you did in the morning. And that's why I was really upset.
I love my own excitement, it just showed in my face. There's a lot of fear and there's a lot of confusion. I didn't know what was happening to my life. I didn't know what was happening to my family's life. I didn't know what was happening to anyone's life. But I looked to the Lord, and the only answers that were inside of me to what to do was just to say what happened.
If you listen to, the copy of that tape today, do you think you could tell whether it was you or not? as a 15-year-old making the tape.
He showed me, he pulled out a picture. And he showed me a picture. And he recognized the picture, but it was me. You know, I don't know what I could do to help. I don't know what I could do to help. But now, you know, for this point in my life, I've got to come to grips, you know, with from where I am at, that all of that has followed me to where I am today. And, you know, of course, even though I've always known that it's always been there and I've never felt that it would go away, and I've always felt at some point, you know, that I would have to face any of this or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
And up to this point, you know, I knew, you know, I don't know, you get a feeling, you know, when those fellas first came to the door, and my wife walked up to the door, and I was coming around the corner, and I knew there was something there.
Uh-huh.
And so I came to the door and I confronted it. You know, and when you guys rang the doorbell, I was sitting down trying to figure out bills.
Uh-huh.
I knew that whoever you were on the other side of the door, I knew it had to do with that. So, you know, but.
So how did you feel when you looked out there and first saw Mary? What was your first reaction?
I wasn't surprised.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't surprised.
Were you alarmed?
And it was, you know, I tell you, what's really incredible was that the day that they had come and knocked on the door and that we had talked, you know, was the very same day that they did the report on Iraq, you know, and it was on TV, and then there you are.
Right? And I sat here and I said to myself, I says, well, Ernie Chambers, I said, look, isn't that something, you know, and I was wanting so bad for him to say, you know, I was waiting for you to get up and talk.
Uh-huh.
And you finally got up, and then you started talking, you know, and I thought, well, that you deserved an introduction.
Well, see, they cut out most of what I said. I had spoken at the very beginning, and my comments, I guess, were too strong for them, so they cut them all out. But after I left that place, Ben took a long interview with me in the barbershop, which he put on the program, which is basically what I said on that program that they cut out. And one person did complain to the station about my traitorous disloyal comment, but he got a lot more calls that were favorable.
Who's the other fellow that was, you know, he'd been up, he'd got
oh, that white guy, Hal Dobb, he had
glasses.
Been, yeah, he had been a congressman.
Yeah.
And then he decided that he was going to run for the U.S. Senate, and he lost in running for the Senate, so he no longer was in office at that time, but he still is a spokesman for George Bush. Anything Bush says, this guy says the same thing, because the one you saw is Hal Dobb.
You didn't like him too much.
But I don't have much respect for him at all.
No.
No. I kind of put that together, yeah.
Yeah.
But for all of that time, I can tell you the best of my recollection, but, you know, there's a lot, you know, in all of this past time that I'm not going to remember.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I can say that no one put anything into my head,
uh-huh.
And no one forced me.
Let me ask you something, Duane, and I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist. We all know that if some very, very bad experiences happen to us when we're young, we can either put them out of our mind altogether, or we can reconstruct what happened so that we can bear to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes psychologists or psychiatrists will put people under hypnosis to draw out of them while they're in that state things that are too painful for them to talk about ordinarily. Would you be able to acknowledge, if it had happened, that they threatened you with the possibility of the electric chair to get you to say anything? And that under that threat, you would have said something that ordinarily you wouldn't. Could you admit it?
I dealt with two things. I could, if that was the resulting thing that had caused me to say something that put somebody away, yes, I would remember.
Okay.
There's two things. Well, as far as dying, I wasn't afraid of dying.
Uh-huh.
You know, being put in an electric chair or anything at all. But my family being hurt, you know, my grandfather was even arrested, you know, at one point.
I didn't know that.
And, know, and he was even taken down to questioning, but the thought of anybody in my family having to suffer as a result of what craziness and confusion and whatever had gone on in my life, I ordered them not to allow that to happen to them. But even though, more so than anything, the only way I could resolve that was to open my mouth and just say what happened. And that's what I had to do.
And you say that you did set that case in that house. Mm-hmm. Is that what you said to them?
That's what I said to them.
Did you make the phone call, if you can recall, before you put it up there or after?
It was after.
And nobody told you to make that call, as far as you remember? Why did it occur to you to make the call?
I went along just basically by everything that had been said by Ed and by Dave of how this thing was supposed to happen, and so I went along with all of that. That's pretty much all. That was about the format, I guess, of how things were supposed to be.
Did you tell the police that you made the call?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so let's come to a point where you've been arrested, if you can recall, just so I have a point from which to discuss with you. When you were arrested, did they tell you that you could have a lawyer present when they questioned you? Do you remember? Was there a lawyer present when they questioned you, of your choosing, or was it you and the police? That's what I'm trying to get to. Do you remember the first place they started questioning you? Was it at the police station, or did they take you someplace else?
Time was at the police station. What I can remember was I can't even remember the guy's house where I was at. Mama Summers. And then her husband had taken me from their apartment and to a house that was just adjacent from the project.
And that's where you were arrested?
That's where he was arrested.
Okay, and they didn't try to talk to you on the way downtown?
No.
Okay, now, when the questioning was underway, and I know you won't remember in detail specific questions.
You know, there was a real tall police officer. He was a black guy. His name was David.
He was there.
Real tall and thin.
Yeah,
probably David. So at that time.
Yeah, sideburns back then. You know, and I can remember I can't really remember being drilled or questioned.
Were you questioned by the black guys then? Because Aaron also had a brother named Arnold. Arnold was in uniform. And Aaron, he was in uniform at one point, and then he became a detective, but at that time, I'm not sure if he was in uniform or not, but the ones who were questioning you, were they in uniform or plain clothes? Do you remember that?
If I can recall, they were uniform and plain clothes officers.
Okay, were they black and white, or just...
Black and white.
Did they tell you... Who brought up the phone call? If you can recall.
I'm not going to try and make myself remember, because I can't.
Okay.
If I could remember... You know, I don't want to try and tell you something that I think, because I haven't really thought about any of this. You know, but I really can't remember.
Would it be real hard for you if we came back and talked to you briefly tomorrow or later? Let you think about it a little while?
I don't think it would make any difference.
You can't be sure.
You know, because the best I can remember, it was at night when they arrested me. Donnie was there. They put me in a car, and he took me downtown.
And you don't remember how the phone call came up?
I sat, I think they brought my grandfather downtown.
At the same time. I mean, after you'd been arrested, though, they didn't pick him up first. They brought him after you had been picked up by them, as far as you know. Now, did they tell you why they picked you up? What led them to you, did they say? Or did you ever find that out? Look, we can't get out of here till tomorrow, so can I let you? Because, see, Dwayne, I don't want to put you through this for too long a period of time anyway. So why don't we, then it'll let you know that I'm not here to just try to
I better talk to you because, you know, the worst thing for me is just sitting back, you know, for these days, for the week that's passed now, and not knowing what's going to happen as a result of this. You know, I called Teresa, you know, and she was afraid, you know.
Oh, you mean you told her that the guys had talked to you?
Yeah, I told her.
What is your relationship to Foxall Pittman? Is there any connection between your family and him? Would she have told Foxall that these guys talked to you? Do you know? If I ask you very pointed questions?
No.
Okay, because there's been a lot that I've gone through during these years trying to puzzle my way through it, because until this day, in my mind, I still have that image of you having been abused by those people down there. And to me,
I still feel, after all these years of everybody that I encountered through those days and through that time, you were the only person that ever showed a genuine care that I saw. I didn't see them.
I'm glad you remember that. Because I know how distressed I was. Okay. Okay. But here's what I want to ask you. When you said made me slip on my, give me a minute. I'm 53 years old now. When you're allowed to forget what you were going to say. It's not age. Let me see now. It went completely out of my mind. Oh, but what I was going to say before I forgot the main point. I'm still envisioning you because I haven't seen you in all that time. As a 15-year-old kid who was out there alone before the mob. And that's the way that I remember you. After your testimony and the trial was over, I never had any inkling of where you were. I honestly thought that the system, the police, may have taken you someplace and had something done to you. I really thought that was a possibility, and other people thought it. But, Dwayne, believe me, in all of these years, I've never heard anybody say they had a desire to do anything to you.
I'm talking about it. Missed out on my whole family life for 20 years. And I never knew.
Well, I can understand you feeling that way, though.
All I had, I got one letter from my dad. You know, and it was just a real brief letter. I guess there were some things that happened in his life. That were real devastating. And I talked to my grandfather maybe once or twice every year.
Dwayne, I don't know if it's a lot, but you look just like you did when you were...
I did?
The last time I saw you, absolutely. One thing, you still have an afro. A lot of people don't have them anymore.
Well, you know me, I don't care.
But you still look the same. It's amazing. I'm glad that life hasn't been any harder on you physically than it appears. I mean, you don't look haggard. You don't look hounded. You don't look...
Do I look comfortable?
You really do. Well, then you have come to terms with the things you have to confront to such an extent that it doesn't show outwardly.
You know, all I know in life and all I've learned is that I've had to do everything on my own.
Uh-huh.
You know, I haven't gotten any help, you know, money-wise or anything from anybody. And just the drive to try and be something good in my life for, you know, I wanted to show my grandpa that that wasn't all bad.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that there was, like, that I could achieve something. And with my mom dying, I wanted to show her that her life wasn't in vain. And it was something good that can come out of what she had to go through, you know.
Why would David, if you want to let him see that letter?
Yeah. David sent a letter to you.
Do you use reading glasses?
Mm-hmm.
Young eyes, see.
I don't have my reading glasses, so I can't.
I hope. It's got a lot of pockets.
I just feel like I'm putting pressure on you, though, by being here, Dwayne. I really do. And
I'm trying to, like, you know, inside me right now, I'm trying to deal with 20 years right now. I'm not if any of this came around.
Yes.
Yeah, and so you're telling me I'm sitting here like I'm calm and, you know, and everything just inside me. I'm ready. Just, do a lot of people know where I'm at?
No, and I won't tell anybody. No, no.
Understand it is kind of really, right, it's kind of small. Okay.
Why are you reading that? Can I go look at your birds?
Sure,
I like animals.
Okay.
I like snakes. I mean, I like all animals, but that lets you know that I like more when I even like snakes.
My cockatiel, I got him up in Freya.
Huh?
The girl in hand raises.
Oh, good night. Can he talk?
No, he can't talk.
Well, I'll say. Strange to go from a
Why are you fighting me?
Okay.
playing with your cat, Eden? Because Ken was watching.
Is he? I forgot that he was inside.
He was sitting. I saw him through the mirror. And when I let him see himself in the mirror, that's when he started making noise. And then he started biting me.
I forgot the cat was even inside. He won't bite you, really. He'll just, you know.
Hopefully he does that to you, too?
Yeah. If he wants to stay put, stay seated.
We'll put the cat out. David is basically saying, he's saying that he didn't know anything about it.
That thing was made in David's basement. It was made in his basement.
Did you see it put together?
I watched it put together. Someone stole it from me.
Well, Dwayne, one thing I'm not going to tell anybody who you are. I'm not. Because there's nothing to be gained by it. And you should tell your sister, don't tell anybody where you are.
Very good to see you.
Oh, I'm glad to see you. And like I said,
I didn't get a chance to tell you that I was okay. Because they didn't allow you to stand there. I think I came out of an elevator.
Uh-huh.
And when you looked at me, you came right up to me. You came right up to me and you let me know that you cared.
Uh-huh.
And I was very scared. And I didn't have anybody to stand by me. And,
uh-huh.
And you were the only person that offered. And when you looked at me, and I didn't even get a chance to say anything to you because, you know, you swept me away. And
right.
I had to tell you that I was okay. I know what you thought. All I can say, and you know, I wasn't beat.
But see, that's why all these years I didn't know.
It was okay.
And see, that compared to what you've gone through is a relatively small thing. But in my mind, it was a young black kids who had been treated in that way, and there was nothing I could do about it. I saw something that I thought was terrible, and I couldn't do anything. And it's bothered me all this time. In fact, we had a meeting. How long ago was it when we were up at Wesley House, and I had talked about
3 months.
Yeah.
3-4 months.
And see, I had no idea where you were at that time. And I mentioned again the impact of what I saw in you, what it had on me, and how I felt about it. So it has stayed with me. But you know, it's kind of an emotional experience for me too, so would you mind if I came and saw you again tomorrow before I leave?
No.
Okay.
No,
okay. How many kids you got?
Well, I got those two.
Okay.
Those two. I was married. I got married once. And yes, I have two other boys.
Uh-huh.
But they're grown up.
Oh, are they?
15.
Good night.
15 and 13 years old. And they're doing well.
That's good.
I don't get to see them. I have to go to another state. But these are my gems. Johnson and Ben. They're the greatest.
I got to let you go. Does the bird have a name?
Seven.
Seven is his name? Is it a male or female?
It's female.
Oh. Seven?
She's here, put her head down. She's ready for you to pet her.
Oh. Well, I'll be.
Your dice are your scratch.
That's really something this tiny, feeling like that. But to show you how I like animals, I read a book review from the New York Times about scorpions. And it mentioned an African variety where the male and the female mate for up to 2 years, and they raise the babies. That doesn't happen in the insect kingdom.
Scorpions?
And that was so fascinating to me that I ordered the book. $95. I didn't know it at the time I ordered it, but I'm going to get it. I've got to read about that. But when little animals, the kind that you ordinarily don't think of as having the same kind of attachment to their young that bigger animals you'd automatically feel, seems so strange to me. And that's why I got to check that out. And one this little, he said, you don't bite hard. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Come magnifying glass.
No, it went right through my finger.
Did he?
Right there.
Oh, you're okay.
Oh, I know he'd be okay. With you. Yeah,
see, he's like one of the, he'd have a pit bull.
Yeah.
And because it wouldn't bite him, he said, oh, he won't bite. And then after he bite me, he said, well, it doesn't hurt. Dwayne, I'm gonna go on because I'm working on a case of my own. It's not nearly as serious as yours, but I got a little more briefing and things that I'm going to do this afternoon. And to be honest, I got some things I just want to kind of sort out in my mind, but I would like to talk to you again before I go.
Okay.
It's really good to see you.
Where are you staying?
At the Red Lion. Is that it?
Yeah,
Red Lion Inn. There's no.
I haven't known what to think about, you know, but any of this.
And I don't know.
I've got to settle myself to, you know, that I guess I've lived in the dark, really, that, you know, knowing where it was.
Uh-huh.
I've been away from everybody, so, you know, I've been, last week, I've been trying to learn myself to come to grips, you know, uh-huh.
It'd be tough to have to live the rest of your life wondering and worry about somebody trying to harm you.
You did that for 20 years. I'm still doing it now.
Yeah, I know. And it's not going to be easy just because I say it to automatically get into a different frame of mind about it. That's not the way we're put together as human beings, but maybe you can kind of, you know, think a little less anxiously. And, Dwayne, I really think you ought to tell your sister, don't tell anybody where you are. And I don't mean out of fear or anything, but, you know, what would be gained by it? I'm not going to tell anybody where you are. I'm not. I'm not going to say you'll cease to exist in my mind because you've been in my mind all these years. And I just...
You should have seen a look on my face. I wish I could have seen a look on my face when you were there on TV.
Oh, yeah.
It's really something. I knew you right away.
Oh, okay, good.
I knew you right away.
Oh, yeah, you must have, because you told me about the program. I didn't tell you I was on it, so you really did recognize me. And they didn't say who I was.
No.
That's good. Unless you know that I'm still out there struggling and scuffling. Well, 7? And Ben works with Channel 7. Did she bite you? Oh, no, see, she knows him. How old is she?
She'll be a year old, probably about February.
And how long do they live usually?
Oh gosh, I shall have them for she's got at least 10, 20 years to go.
Oh really?
Yeah, I believe that's a little.
Good night.
That's a long time.
Boy, and if she gets stronger, she gets older. In about 5 years, she'll take your finger off.
I wish I could teach her to talk. And you know, I don't know. We haven't done anything. I guess you can buy recorders. Tapes that you can play for them, you know, and let them listen to it over and over again, and they'll learn how to talk. So,
wow,
she makes all the syllables, so, you know, she calls a cat.
Oh.
She goes to kitty, 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 kitty. You know,
uh-huh.
Like that. But she doesn't, you know, where you can, it's not real audible. You can just hear it.
I wonder if that's why the cat was looking, or if he saw her as a morsel, because when I saw the cat,
he's been a really good cat, you know, that's Moy's cat, and he's been a really good cat in that, you know, the birds have been out at times, and he makes no attempts for them.
Oh, good.
But in the same instance, though, you know, the birds will be playing in the backyard or something, and he'll go out in the backyard and try and catch them back.
He might know the difference between these and wild birds.
Oh, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Keep him well fed, too, so that in the house he'll know that nothing in here is to be eaten.
Except his dinner.
Headed to him. Right.
But, you know, what are you doing for today?
Well, I was just going to go back over to the place and do a little of some of the research that I got to do. I brought a lot of paperwork with me. My work never gets done. I work at it, but I never really get caught up. So in coming out here, I brought some of it with me. I had one brief that I had to have filed by Wednesday, and because I wasn't sure I'd get back to Omaha in time, then I went on and finished that Saturday and mailed it in, so that'll get in on time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Why would you have in mind?
Well, I don't know. It's been a long time. I've got to sit and I've got to sort through. I've got to sort through my head too. In fact, I'm talking to you.
Well, how about if I call you later on today and see if you want to maybe go get something to eat or something?
Okay, well, I might even come over there.
Yeah.
What room is it?
107.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I might even do that. Okay. I wish I knew the phone. Well, you can get the phone number.
I got the number.
Right? Yeah, and you can just tell them Ernie Chambers if you forget room 107.
Okay.
And I'm going to be in there. Now I might get something to eat. But other than that, that's where I'm going to be. I don't know anybody in this town. And I'm going to be honest. There's not a lot in this town that will draw me out. When we were in what was called downtown, I couldn't believe it. It looks like what I was singing that song to Ben, Welcome to the Pole Side of Town. I mean, you know, where there aren't many of us.
What does Omaha look like now?
They're building up downtown. But our area, there are a lot of vacant lots, and what we're going to try to get them to do is do some building. That's what I'd like to see in the community. Persuade black people to stay where we live, because it's where we've always been. We shouldn't be ashamed of the community and run away from it. And there are white people. We're looking at it because it is that flat land. It's near downtown, and now they run a freeway through the middle of it. Some people have designs on it, and I wish the black people would not give up that prime land, stay there. So if you came back to Omaha, parts of it would look a lot different from what it was when you were there, especially on 24.
Mm.
You know, a lot of vacant lots now. And when I was growing up, if somebody had told me some of the buildings and stores that had been there for as long as I can remember would not only be vacant, but lots would be there because the stores would no longer be there, I wouldn't have believed it. Because when you grow up, you think what you see is the way it always has been and always will be. But it's a lot different in appearance. But you don't look different.
I don't look different.
Not to me. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Because when you came to the door, I knew it was you. If I hadn't been told that this is where you live, I would have known you.
Is that from George, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Georgia?
Right. And what I told them is that because I had talked to Joe, and he told me that they had located you. I said, I'd really like to talk to Dwayne, so if you talk to him again, give him my number at my office, and he can call me. I said, but I take collect calls. I said, but to let him know that I'm looking out for his welfare, and Joe never told me where you were until we came here. I said, in order that there be no way for me to find out where he is through this phone call, you all pay for the call so that, because if it's a collect call, his phone number will be on my phone bill,
mm-hmm.
area code, and I said, I don't want to know. And I said, tell him that I'd want to talk to him, because I thought you might
Ernie,
talk
I
to
trust
me.
You. I do.
Okay.
I trust you. I've always trusted you. And, you know, I guess you can apologize to Joe and George. It's, you know, I didn't know them, and thinking about my family, I didn't, you know, as far as acknowledging them.
Well, they understood that. They said, after all, two white guys from Britain come and appear on your doorstep and say, we want to talk to you about your past. They understood it. They did. And in reality, people you don't know, you don't owe anything to. Even though I'm a public official now, and I talk to anybody on public issues, people can disagree with me, and I'll hear them out. But when it comes to some things that are personal to me, I tell them, that's not what I'm in office for. You can't talk to me about that unless I want to talk to you about it. And if I don't know them, then there's only so far into me, I let them go. When people want to interview me, and they used to want to do it a lot more than they do now, because they know I don't give interviews about me, my kids, my family. I tell them, my family is not who is in office, I am. And in the same way you didn't want yours targeted for things, I didn't want mine. I got two bullet holes in my car now. The barbershop window's been shot out several times. He finally got bulletproof glass. It's two doors down now. Where Freddie Williams' office used to be, right on the end. Got bulletproof glass, and they're from a bank that went out of business. And it has been shot at several times, but the bullets have not penetrated. So I know the feeling of not wanting attention focused on somebody who's innocent and had nothing to do with it, with whatever reason somebody might have for not liking me.
Yeah, that's with me now. It's a really big concern.
Uh-huh.
I had a really wonderful life for you. I have to meet your being. I have to meet my boys that like you, too.
Okay. Good. And look, if you don't get over there today, I'm gonna come check, see you tomorrow. Do you mind if I get a phone number from you? Mm-hmm. Then before I come, I can make sure that you'll be here.
You can call me 922-1964.
Oh, well, I was gonna do like I do at home. Anything that can be written on,
it's been drawn just regular.
That's good. Because I've drawn 922-1964. Okay.
You're not sentimental about that?
That's right.
Oh, okay. when my kids were little, everything they did was special. Okay, now
I am. I've got to get myself settled down.
Right, I want to give you a chance to do that.
I'm surprised you tell me I don't look upset and you're sitting there shivering.
That, well, you conceal it very well.
We'll talk, okay?
Good. Right. Okay, little brother.
It's nice
Wayne,
to meet you.
Wayne, it's nice to meet you, man.
Take care.
All right. You too. All right.
Now, Dwayne, if I say...
I'll probably be back with him.
Okay. If I say I think of you as a son, I wasn't as tall as this when I said...
You were. I'm old enough to serve that.
Good.
Yeah, and you too, as you've been doing.
Hey, listen now. We'll be around this time.
There's not much in this town. It really isn't, you know. It's, for this area, it's supposed to be a pretty fair-sized town.
Do you have any problem with the neighbors?
Thank you, I'm glad. Especially since you got kids.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
Take it easy now.
Okay. We're going to go. I got to do a little traveling down, too. I really do.
I'm not in.
You're in dry. I'm in
park. That's where I start?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oops, I don't want to take a chance. Yeah. Let me see. Where's the,
defrost?
That? Yeah.
That would be it. Because it's up there.